When I got there, first of all, Dolby Mall still stood tall and proud and had a theater in there.
Oh,
there's
Dolby
no
Mall.
More Dolby Mall. It's like a Target now.
I saw some great shows at Dolby Mall.
Oh my God, Dolby was amazing. Student biryani. Let's see.
And Oma's Kitchen was my, oh my, that was my go-to.
Hoa was the jam, actually.
Oh, Hoa Hoa. I loved Hoa Hoa, yeah.
That was the one that everybody was like.
Yeah, that place was great.
That place was amazing.
Oh man.
Good times. Well, I suppose we should transition to our episode.
We can, as whenever you're ready, say, hey, Adam, and we'll start.
I know, it's so hard because there's so many good Austin places we still need to riff on. Okay.
You know what? We're going to have so many pre-shows and so many post-shows, and I'll cut and paste this stuff wherever you want.
I know.
But we can talk about CX at some point.
I know.
I'm down.
We should. All right. Well, let's get into it. So, hey, Adam.
Hey, Dee.
Do you think CSMs should train?
No. I mean, okay, let's talk about it. This is CX Etera, where we talk about the future of CX and a bit more.
A bit more, that's right. And I'm your co-host, Dee Kapila. Here with me today, we've got...
Adam Avramescu.
Yeah, I love how I said here with me today, because if on some days, I may not have it. Wow.
It's possible.
I could, well, if you...
It makes me sound like I'm the guest, which... Sometimes I feel like I'm a guest in my own life, so I may as well be a guest on the podcast.
That is a different podcast that we need to start, my friend. Being a guest in your own life.
Yeah. Well, speaking of parties to which people are guests or not invited, training customers, that's a big one.
It's huge. It's huge. And it's something, so let's kind of talk about, before we get into the should CSMs versus should CSMs not and contexts and that kind of a thing, why this is such a hot topic for both of us. Like, why is it something that as we were tossing around ideas, it was like, yes, we should talk about this one. And maybe we'll go back and forth, because I don't know about you, but I have multiple reasons why I wanted to talk about this. One of the reasons is that I feel like every single role that I'm in, it is like a decision point that comes up. So it's not, I've never been in an organization where there is a philosophy around this that is like, well, you know, honed and believed by the folks that are kind of in the go-to-market motion. It's always something that kind of comes up as a discussion point or a milestone or like a maturity, you know, like stage gate where the decision needs to be made. So it's always something I feel like I have to have a discussion with my peers on and that I have a very specific POV on. So that's like one of the reasons why I found it interesting. How about you?
Yeah, me too, for the same reason. And I think if you kind of look at the parties involved, there's typically CSMs who do a lot of customer facing things up to and including often training, right? Training, like, especially before you have any other specialty roles. That's like one of the things a CSM does. And then you have education teams or scaled CX teams or digital CX teams, depending on what the scope or mandate is, who might be doing things at scale, might be doing one to many. And then you often have professional services who might be offering paid trainings, might be doing the one to many stuff. So even just laying that out, it's not always clear to me or to the people that I'm working with, like, where should each of those activities live and where do you draw the line? So that's why it's interesting to me too.
Yeah, I love that. Very true. And I think the contexts in which I've had the discussion have also varied, which I, you know, normally would think, well, that might change my answer. And it might slightly in terms of how we implement, but like, I've had a couple of contexts. Like, one is incredibly mature, you know, go to market motions for large multi-product companies, right? So like that's one. And why is that? What is the context there? It's scale is really baked into pretty much everything. Like scale, rigor, quality, all those types of things are like baked into mature, you know, multi-product. You know, these are billion-dollar companies that are like well known in their categories, right? That's one context. The other context where I've had to have the conversation is in either startup or scale ups, right? So it's like companies that are just beginning that growth climb and starting to, you know, like we're now starting to kind of 10x our employee base. Like maybe you started with 100 employees, and now you're kind of getting into that four digit, and it's happening really fast, right? And then the flip side of that is I've been at companies where, you know, you've got like 400 or 500 employees and you all of a sudden have a huge growth, like that's Miro, right? Like it's like massive growth, really fast. And it's a category defining product, right? So that's how I would like separate those two contexts, like similar things happening in companies, but one might be a product or like a company in a category that like people understand, right? So for example, yeah. That could be a company like, let's say Box, which is also where I worked, right? The category was understood when I was working at Box and the growth was happening. Whereas at Miro, the category is just being defined while the growth is happening. So those are slightly two different variations, right? So I would say those are the three kind of primary contexts in which I've considered this. I'm trying to think if there are others. I mean, I've had like,
I'm trying to pattern match against my own. I mean, like, okay. So Optimizely, I think would be for me a good example of starting from an earlier stage where the category wasn't super established. Cause I mean, A/B testing was a thing and conversion rate optimization was a thing, but Optimizely, you know, in 2012, 2013 or so was just trying to define a category as we were building a product in it. So, and for that matter, when I joined the company, it was 100 people. I think they just had their 100 employee picnic the week before I joined.
Oh, cute.
And so, yeah, it was cute. I got the t-shirt. I still have it. So like coming from that point, when we think about training, it was number one, a highly technical product where not just from the point of view of like technical to operate, but you had to know something about statistics to be able to interpret an experiment. You had to know strategically what made for a good experiment or a bad experiment. So like, I kind of take that as an example of your both like earlier stage as well as building the category as the company grew. I contrast that a little bit with say Slack, where there, I mean, I think a lot of our customers thought they understood it wasn't a highly technical product in most cases, unless you were building custom apps and custom bots and things like that. But our customers thought that they understood what Slack was and thought that they understood, you know, communication software. It's just like DMing and stuff like that. But actually there, the training need was more around best practices and building organizational processes. So it's not just like, what is this product, but how do you actually use it versus how do you think you use it compared to, you know, now I would use Personio as an example. It's my current role where it's HR and payroll software. And so there, the category is very well established and very well understood, but in many cases, we're trying to train teams that like the teams themselves don't necessarily have as much background in HR because, you know, for our larger customers, they've got developed teams. They kind of know what they're doing and they more or less just need our help adapting their processes to Personio. But for our small and medium customers, even in a lot of cases, they haven't had HR processes before. They haven't been doing any of this at a higher level. So like there we have opportunity to educate them. So you know, when I look at these different use cases, you see why there's a big need for training, whether that training is product, process, training on the field. And it's natural, I think, for a CSM who has been tasked with retention, adoption, being a trusted advisor, would want to step in and do training, right? Because that's a way to engage the customer and help them grow. But then the question is like, at what point does that become a bad use of their time? That's how I take this whole thing.
I mean, so that's definitely one thing, right? Where it's like, okay, you know, and you've written a literal book about, you know, education as a scale engine for success, right? So it's like, there's the scale argument. I also think, and a nice little drop in there, 20% of all sales after this episode are mine now, Adam, just FYI.
use coupon code D recommends D. At checkout.
Exactly. So I think that's like one really great argument. The other thing too for me is like, I think credibility is another one. I think credibility, expertise, you know, these things become incredibly important when you're really kind of in this like vertical race. right? And you're finally starting to say, okay, instead of having like a completely horizontal product where people are just skimming adoption, you know, you might be very successful at going super horizontal, but you just haven't really gotten depth of usage, right? It becomes even more important to have experts there. And like, I mean, I think about some of the trainers, you know, that I worked with when I was at Visa, talking about the payments industry, and you're talking about regulated industries, and you're working with all sorts of clients, right? So I think like, even when I think about Box, when I was in professional services there, you know, I leveraged our training team because of expertise in certain topics and areas. And, you know, I was really focused on particular verticals, right? And like, we were all, you know, in professional services meant to be SMEs in different topics, right? So you could pull in somebody else in professional services for a client who had multiple use cases, and you might have vertical expertise in two out of three of their use cases. You pulled in another professional services consultant for that third one. You didn't feel the pressure to sort of, because that's not right for the client, right? So again, it's like, I think that expertise, the credibility, I think is another argument that's really, really important that sometimes gets forgotten, I think.
Yeah. And like, where do you think that credibility generally lies? Because there's a few players here. There's like the professional services person who's in the center of excellence. There's the training team. There's the CSM. So like, tell me more about that.
Yeah, it's a great question, because I sort of like smushed two different categories of expertise that I meant to call out. So one is obviously topics, right? So you can pull in SMEs from anywhere, and you can create an educational experience with the vertical expertise of that SME. But in terms of education, I think sometimes people think that that doesn't come with its own level of expertise, right? Like delivery of education is an expertise, right? Learning experience design is an expertise, right? Like these are all key areas of expertise as well that I think sometimes, like, and it's not the same thing as a demo, for example, right? Like I might be really great as an instructor, but I might not be as great of a demoer as somebody on my like SC team or something, right? Like, I mean, I think things are important to understand when you get past a certain size or ARR for a company. So I mean both levels of expertise. There's that vertical SME, and then there's also the actual, the different elements of training that come in. One final thing I'll say on that too, it's like when we start as education teams working in different channels, so we're doing in-app stuff, right? It's like that's where it becomes interesting, because you've got like growth teams or in-product teams that are like, well, that's our domain and that's our area of expertise. Totally. But I think the really good ones know that, hey, I'm going to pull someone in. Like I've got this awesome instructional designer on my team who worked at Babbel. Like that's the person you pull in when you're building in product educational experiences and you're a product team, right? It's like, I think it's important for those teams to realize when to pull in education, and for education to realize when to pull in SME experts from other parts of the business.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a really good point. Cause like, I mean, first of all, even within my team, for instance, we're scaled CX, but our education team, well, we don't have a team called the education team. We have a training team who works on the academy. We have our digital CX team who works on a lot of the in-apps, contextual help, point-in-time campaigns, things like that. And even between those teams, we need to know when to pull each other in. But that becomes a whole lot more complex when then we're also talking about different cross-functional teams who might either own a certain surface, like the product-led growth team owning, you know, different in-app interfaces, like you called out. But it's also like, it's interesting with CSMs and training, because on one hand, I completely agree with you that, like, you're right. Often we overvalue either technical expertise or domain expertise, where we say, hey, let's bring in that subject matter expert from the sales engineering team or from whatever team you want to say, because they either know this use case really well, or they know this feature really well, or they know how the product works for this industry vertical really well, like you called out. But people don't necessarily think as much about the actual craft needed to structure something like training to actually make it work and actually make a change behavior. Cause people are like, oh, training, that's easy. Let's just demo the product and do a webinar. And I don't know why that is. I don't know why like one is perceived as being more of a hard skill and one is more of a soft skill. Well, maybe I do, and I just can't explain it very well, but I definitely see that dynamic.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I take out of what you said, and maybe we can explore this a little bit, is when you're talking about, you know, these horizontal products that touch so many different business units and use cases, often on the customer side, the people that you're training and the like it's a variety of personas who all need to be able to do different things. Right. So you might even need different levels, types, styles, formats, et cetera, of training. So in a way, I think it becomes dangerous if you start by saying, hey, there's this role called CSM, and they're responsible for all of this engagement with the customer, so let's just have them do training. Well, they might train the team that they have access to or the point of contact they have access to, but there might be all of these other business units, all of these other roles, all of these other personas who aren't going to be able to do what they need to do without the CSM training them. That's what I draw out of what you said earlier.
Well, and I think that's such a good point too. It's like, I think there's different, listen, everyone's in the education business, right? It's like everyone's in the customer experience business in an organization. You cannot relegate that sort of thing to just one department exclusively, right? So no one here, like, I don't think either of us are arguing that like the moment that a customer is like, hey, can you show me how to like, they're talking to their CSM. It's like, can you show me how to use this feature? The CSM is like, oh, nope, yeah, can't like, do it.
No, I'm sorry. We have to draft up a statement of work.
No. Like, that's not.
Yeah.
Right. But I think that, like, for example, again, being married to someone who's been in CS for years and years and years, like, and has never trained in this way, in the way that you and I are talking about, but has obviously done a form of education to the customer that is part, like, is 100% in their remit and in the remit of all customer facing teams, right? Which is to build that foundation of product understanding, to get them to understand exactly what all is available to them and how we can help them drive value and achieve their outcomes, right? Like, that's education too, and that sits squarely in the CSM's sort of space. But I think you can, it's funny, I'm going to say something like kind of controversial. I think you can tell how senior and seasoned a CSM is based on if they train their customer, if they pull in a resource to do it, right? And I would say that applies also for other teams. And it's like it's actually something I learned from a customer when I was in professional services at Box. Like it's a phrase that one of my customers said to me is that that's how they evaluate vendor maturity. Is by understanding what go-to-market resources are available to them. And if their primary contact, whether that's an account manager, at the time it was like, I think like some sort of hybrid role between sales and CS, whether that person QBs and pulls in those right folks or not. And I thought that was such an interesting way. And it's something that when I went on to evaluate, when I went on the client side at Visa and started evaluating vendors, actually in the HR tech space that we were trying to bring on, that's how I would evaluate them. So I'd be like, tell me about the go-to-market teams that would help us implement and drive adoption of your tool. And I went through several vendors, and it was part of why we like chose the LXP at the time that we chose, was because they had a specific education team. They had a specific, integrations team, and they were bringing all that to bear instead of like one catch-all ill-defined CS role.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, again, like in an early stage of a company's maturity, you probably only have that one role who's accustomed to doing everything. And at the same time, generally, those early CSMs are also not the people who are more professionalized career CSMs. They are, what's the word that people say, friends and fools? Who join a company early and then develop and grow with the company. So they end up developing a lot of skills, but you're right that they're not necessarily thinking, like they have an extremely high degree of ownership over the customer success, which on the plus side means that often they're super knowledgeable about the product and they can take extremely good care of the customer. But on the other side, it doesn't really scale. And it means that they don't think of themselves as the QB or the quarterback of the customer's experience. So to your point, they often aren't drawing in other teams. And I looked at this actually, because like there's a million studies out there that look at various things like this. So the one I happened to pull was customer success statistics from Vitally, right? One of the customer success platforms out there. And in one of the studies that they ran, I think this one's from 2023, they say 66% of CSMs say they spend a significant portion of their workday on repetitive admin tasks. And by admin here, they might be thinking about, you know, updating the CRM. They might be thinking about other repetitive activities like that. But time and time again, when you look at how a CSM's time is broken down, they spend a lot of time having repetitive interactions with customers. And a lot of those repetitive interactions are, you know, they might be doing like onboarding and intake. They might be doing, well, renewal calls are less repetitive depending on what's happening with the renewal or the churn. But trainings are definitely one of them. If you're running repetitive 101 level trainings all the time with your customers, and to me, this starts getting into the heart of like why CSMs do training, is I think a less experienced CSM, and even to some extent, like CS leaders who are used to everything being very high touch and not scaling, looks at those trainings as an opportunity to build a relationship with a customer.
100%, right?
And so not doing that training means the relationship is not getting built, right? And they might not have another opportunity to get in front of the customer like that. And I understand that. But at the same time, like, what are you optimizing for? Are you optimizing for the amount of time that you, CSM, spend having FaceTime with your customer? Or are you optimizing for your customer's ability to be successful with your product and renew?
Right.
In which case, you probably are bringing in more experts from around the organization to help make that happen, even if you're still the strategic advisor and the quarterback.
Yeah. So let's get into this, because, what are the main arguments to what, like, that you've heard to why a CSM wants to do training? And I think you touched on the big one, which is like, hey, this helps me book more calls. On sort of the leadership side, I've heard that, and I've also heard, hey, this is one way that I can make the CSM's job more interesting to them. Like, you know, this is to professionally develop them for them to do training.
Yeah, they like training. Yeah.
They like training, right? And you know, and to your point, like, whether the training is repetitive or not is like a question mark that I have. Cause like when I've listened to gong calls and like, you know, like even just sat in with CSMs in the past, anything that repetitive gets really hard to deliver consistently. And this is true for education teams too. Like when you don't have like quality mechanisms and things in place, you're going to forget stuff, or like in a continuous release environment. If a CSM is doing 50,000 things, like unfortunately most of us pressure our CSMs to do, then they're not going to be as in step with product releases. So that training is actually not going to be as consistent as we think it is going to be. Most of the time, you know, we're human, so it's going to get kind of boring, whatever. The other piece of it is you're not going to have the latest information. I've actually had customers come to me and say, well, I have very dramatically different training experiences from your like live scalable education webinar versus what was delivered to me by this like SE or CSM or whatever. Right. And that's not great for the brand. That's not great for the relationship either. And so, so to me, it's sort of like a short-sighted argument of building the relationship, but also like what, you know, like I completely understand and resonate with it, because it is a practical offering to the customer to give them training, right? And so
yeah, for sure,
it's tough.
And you're already in front of the customer, so you know, especially if they're saying, "Hey, I need help with this," then CSMs generally want to be helpful as well, right? It's like we hire people who are good natured and helpful to do this job. And so, if a customer is saying, "I need help with something," then of course the first instinct is going to be, "Well, let me train." And again, there's a line here. Like I'm not saying this shouldn't ever happen, but I see the same dynamic that you do. And I love a distinction that you just made a moment ago, which is between the idea of something being repetitive and something being consistent. Because you might think, oh, CSMs are spending so much of their time doing these trainings over and over and over, so it's going to be repetitive to them. And whether it interests them or not, that's a different question. You can like something that's repetitive, I guess. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's consistent for the customer. Because what I often see is that you have CSMs doing trainings over and over, and it's repetitive to them, But to the customer, actually, it's very inconsistent because you're right. It's not necessarily getting updated as the product gets update. But also, I saw this, for instance, at Slack. Like at Slack, we did an audit of how many different 101 or Slack user essentials or Slack basics, or we called them, you know, four or five different things, which is probably already a problem because it was more or less the same set of skills that we were building. And depending on like what segment the CSM was in and when they happened to update the deck, they were just copying and pasting and modifying decks from each other. So often what was happening is, you know, deck one would branch into 1A and 1B, 1B would branch into 1B1, 1B2. And then at a certain point, you're right, that's not getting updated as the product gets updated. So actually, like, even though it's still really repetitive, it's not delivering a consistent experience for the customer. And so one way when I talk to leadership about like, is this a good idea? Is this a bad idea? I try to do it from the customer lens. And I say, let's imagine that this same customer over their life cycle, because we're going to cut territories in various ways. Let's imagine they change CSMs. Let's imagine they change CSMs two or three times. And so a new CSM is going to deliver the change of champion training or the new admin training. Is the customer getting the same experience? Is the customer actually getting like a bespoke experience? And maybe this is your objection number two, so I'm gonna shut myself up in a moment. But often it's not bespoke; it's just like arbitrary.
Right, right. No, I think that experience conversation, that's such an important one to have. I don't know about you, but I feel like that has been moving to the back burner recently. Has been the trend. I think the trend has been, you know, the last couple of years, so much on business efficiency. Has often been, you know, in opposition to that experience as if they're like at odds. And I don't think that's the case, but I think most of the conversations that people have been having internally, anyone that I've talked to, like in our peer groups, it's been more focused on like getting the go-to-market teams to be more efficient and like lower the, you know, like essentially the cost to serve that customer. But it's also sort of like at a detriment to the experience. And I think that what we're not recognizing is that like in not having scaled resources that are really targeted towards specific areas, not just training, right? It's like clearly defined CS, clearly defined solutions versus like sales engineering, right? Like all those things are incredibly important.
Playbooks, use cases, recipes.
Exactly, right? And for that value to cut through all areas of the business. And I think, you know, so I'm happy to hear you say that. And I think that on its own is an argument and it should just be like a mic drop, right? But one of the things,
but it's often not.
It's often not, right? It's often not. And that's the thing where I feel like it can feel a little bit like we're at odds internally on how to serve the customer, which I think is a good point of discussion. Every so often as a go-to-market team, you should get your main customer facing scaled and one, you know, like one-to-one sort of named and assigned resources together and say, all right, like, let's take a look at all of our offerings, like our menu of offerings, and like, let's reevaluate if this is working for us. Cause I'll tell you one thing. It's like, you know, obviously when you're growing and you're trying to maintain both things, like a strong customer, like a consistent customer experience that's high quality, and, you know, you want to be, you know, besties with your CFO and you don't want to have a lot of like waste in the system, a customer education team that's scaling your training across your various plans and, you know, use cases is an incredibly important step. However, I think that where we get lost sometimes is we like just offer training for the sake of offering the training as well, right? And it's like, let's use these resources to offer the training. What you're really trying to do is sort of have this consistent approach where you're baking it into that go-to-market motion so that training is not optional. It doesn't require your field teams to pull a trainer in. It is baked into that customer journey because over time, once that demand is there and those resources are being utilized, you actually can outsource a portion of this and make it a lot more user-friendly for the customer, right? Because right now the issue, if you were to do this, is like, okay, let's say we take training from the CSMs, we start a customer education team, and you're kind of lifting and shifting, and then you do, after some repetition, gain that economy of scale, right? But then as your product grows and you start to get different types of training experiences, you would have to do the same thing you would in CS land, which is hire a bunch of trainers. And what I'm saying is like, well, no, at that point, you evaluate that menu and you start to say, well, what if this stuff could be kind of like what Superhuman did, where, you know, you can book somebody to train you in 30 minutes online and they're available within an hour, right? Like those types of experiences you can outsource. And so now you've got the volume of training offerings that are available in that menu, but at a fraction of the cost. And it's actually better for the customer because, you know, you're going to have your trainers focused on these like really great bespoke experiences, whereas like a quick onboarding just to get them started using a product. And I think this is going to be particularly relevant in the AI, like, you know, the suite of AI companies that are coming up now to actually have a human come in and do a quick training and teach you, get you over that initial curve of usage. Mm-hmm. Can be done in much, much more scalable ways than even we do today, right? Like with our team. So that's a very long way of saying, like, even in our world, we scale further. So it's not about lifting and shifting from CS land only to not scale here, but yeah.
No, I agree. And there's a few points that I would love to draw out of that, because I think you had a few mic drops in there as well. Maybe just like starting where you ended. I agree with the point that you're making, that like eventually it's not just a matter of saying, hey, we had a bunch of humans called CSMs who are doing this work, and then we're going to hire a bunch of trainers who are going to do this work, because you're right, that doesn't make it more efficient. But that balance that you called out, I think, between ultimately what we want to do for business efficiency and what we want to do for customer experience and actually driving outcomes, right? Leading a, you know, ultimately a cycle of positive activation, adoption, renewal, expansion, you sort of have to figure out almost segment by segment or market by market. And actually at Personio, we're in the process of doing this right now, of mapping out what you want the desired experience to be and what is the answer today. And then what is the gap between that? But like, you can do that just on its face, but I think it's better done if you start with the conversation that you just pointed to, which is like, what do we actually want to optimize for? Are we trying to optimize for efficiency? Well, that actually means that we should develop different types of programs first that actually help us drive that scale and efficiency. Or do we want to optimize for customer outcomes? In which case, maybe we start by doing some of these more manual things. Mm-hmm. So I think like starting with a little bit of a conversation about, because like otherwise you're just going to keep getting toggled back and forth between those ends. And I think that's why sometimes you like build a program with one intention and then you shadow build the other side of that program.
Yeah.
So I definitely like that part resonates. And the other part, again, you talked about, I think, the other main objection that I hear, which is the point about wanting training to feel bespoke to the customer. And it's true, like a human can often make training more bespoke and customized. So you might be worried about saying, hey, let me bring in a customer education team who delivers one-to-many trainings. Maybe I should be worried about doing too much like online academy stuff because the customer needs something that's human and personalized. Well, first of all, it's like, it's an and, not an or, I think. There are a lot of things that truly do not need a high level of customization, and you want to supplement it with human-led programs where more of that customization is needed. So you end up with a spectrum. But often, and again, this is like the conversation I have to have actually going and watching CSM trainings or even, you know, watching any human-led trainings, is that the things that are being changed and being made bespoke are not super white glove value add things to begin with. Often it's just like changing a few details for the sake of changing a few details. So it's like, if you want to do that, then like a CSM can do that without conducting a full hour of training. A CSM can be a layer of customization on the top to say, hey, we have these great scalable options. They are included in your package, no additional charge. I will come in and I will share some great tips, best practices, et cetera, on top of that.
I love
you got to start with that.
But you got to start with that. So I think some of this does come down to comfort with being a leader in, you know, as a CSM. And I think that is also where I see folks trip up, because a customer will say, I want custom. And immediately, mm-hmm.
Everyone says they want custom.
Everyone says they want custom. Everyone wants that. I've said that, but you know, half the time it's not the case, right? Or a scaled team can easily make tweaks to make it more custom, right? Using the right integrations is like really easy one. It's like, okay, you don't use XYZ tool, but you use ABC tool, swapped, done. You know, a trainer who was training on this on a regular basis, like that's nothing for them, right? Like even getting in the environment of the customer is not a big deal, right? These are folks that are toggling between various different environments on a weekly basis as they deliver different types of training across plans and things like that. So I think a lot of it comes down to being comfortable saying to a customer, hey, exactly what you said, Adam, right? It's like, start with this, and then I'm going to come in on top and give you that additional, like, very specific value. We're going to do a workflow consult and we're going to figure out exactly what your workflow is. Now you've got that baseline knowledge and I'm going to help you bring it all together. And then you can talk about things like, all right, we are going to do a custom training in your environment for your entire user base. And that's hundreds of thousands of users. And let's build that together. And then you decide if that's happening with your scale team or pro serve, depending on like where you're at in your monetization journey of things like that, you know, that might have a cost. But I think the assumption that I see a lot of CSMs make is that that's pushing back on the customer. It's like not giving them exactly what they want when they asked for it. But that's not, I don't think that's what you and I are saying. We're saying do the discovery, right? Like help your customer figure out exactly what it is that they're looking for. And then it's your job to make your entire organization deliver it. So like then talk to your training teams and say, look, I did additional discovery. This is what the customer needs. And I think that any customer education team, even scaled one, worth their salt, is going to do what they can to make that customer successful. But it doesn't happen without you having the right conversation with the customer. And then I think there are boundaries, right? Because, I think about my time in professional services, and there are tons of times that customers ask for things that like weren't in the SOW or weren't necessarily in my wheelhouse. And you say that, right? And I have never had a customer balk at any of that. Not a single customer has ever balked when I've said, well, hey, I totally get that request. That's not what I do, or that's not in the SOW. Do you want to explore XYZ as an add-on? Yeah. Or I'm going to pull in a colleague. So this may take a week, to get scheduled between us. Are you okay with that? Never has that been an issue.
If it does, and it escalates. But like, I think the far more common thing is seeing, I think, less mature, I'll use that term with appropriate delicacy, like less mature CS teams falling over themselves to not say no to a customer, or less mature professional services teams saying, well, let's just like change the scope, when actually, like, sort of like you were talking about earlier, where more mature, more experienced CSMs, stronger CSMs are willing to push back and are willing to consult and are willing to say, hey, I hear you. This is what I understand you need. This is the better way to do it. Like, I'm not going to do exactly what you're asking for. I'm going to do the thing that's going to get you the result that you're pointing at.
Right.
And that's true in the professional services world too, where, we don't just have to like completely change a statement of work, but you know, like I always ask the question with offerings like this, who's paying for it? Because we can have CSMs who do not come at an additional cost delivering a bunch of custom bespoke trainings for a customer one off, but you do too much of that and then you're going to blow out your ratio, and then the business is paying for that. So like, who's footing the bill? Yeah,
right. Exactly. I know. And listen, this is a hard thing, right? Like I've worked with several really great CS leaders who understand what we're saying and yet have very specific needs that we're unable to really parse through, or that we hadn't. And so we've sat down and parsed through them and figured out, okay, how do we make sure the ratio is the right ratio and that we're also bringing your team in, and we've come up with ways to explore that, and we've done experiments together and we've like tried different things. So one example of an experiment that I'll detail is I'm not going to name him, but he's one of my best buds today. And it was like led our CS practice at this company that I worked at, and just really great leader and just like very open to this conversation, which I think sometimes I've found people to be a little bit, I don't want to have this conversation in CS around training, but he was totally open to it. And said, look, we're having a really hard time right now, given what's happening, in the world at the time, booking calls. So like training is the only thing that seems to resonate with these folks. Like how, you know, I need to figure out how we, you know, we book calls in other ways. And, you know, until then, we've got this like huge influx of customers coming in. Like how do we like actually, like, will you work with me on an experiment where your team trains this particular like cadre of CSMs to like do the training? And then we just see what the NPS looks like. And I'm like, okay,
yeah,
let's try it. Right. Because then it's a different model that we might explore as we get into planning for next fiscal and that sort of thing. And I'm always open to that. Right. So we did the experiment. I actually had my trainers train the CSMs, very small group of CSMs. We spent about 6 hours training them on delivering a like one-on-one training. And essentially they delivered it to the customers, and they actually, we like in a true experiment fashion had control groups, and you know, like we picked very specific, customers that we were going to deliver this to, right? Like both customers that we had delivered training to before, where we had actual NPS that we could track against for this, working on new lines of business, and customers who had never experienced this before. And what we found was that the CSM NPS was 25 points less. And when we tried to offer additional training on top of that, we were really only able to make up the delta by like 5. I think it was like actually 4 NPS points. So again, 20 NPS points for 6 hours, just like it, the math did not work out. And we ended yeah. up actually being able to have a discussion around, well, how do we change the way that the CSM, it like, how do we change the what of what the CSM is offering the customer to get that booking? How do we leverage digital success to help drive that booking in an automated way as well? And then get the education team to come in and offer that training and then sort of do it with the CSM on the call to do exactly what you said earlier, Adam, which is like, then the CSM comes in and offers those like full consults and that customized sort of piece of things. And it ended up actually doing two things. One, it improved the ways in which the training team actually went to market, right? Instead of sort of sitting around waiting for like a Salesforce case to be opened to like drive, you know, like to get pulled into an account, we're actually having a conversation with the CSM, with the account, and then delivering the training. And then it also improved the way that the entire CS org thought about their role. So it was a really great experiment that ended up changing things for both the education and the CS team. But I think that, you know, having the points, the different, like the differences in those NPS scores and the amount of time that it takes to actually enable internally, that also gets lost. I think a lot of go-to-market leaders can be like, well, why don't sales and CSMs do training? And it's like, well, I mean, why don't I build your vehicle? I mean, there's a like, there's yeah. expertise here, right? You don't want me doing that. Trust me.
It's true. I mean, anyone can do anything, but it's a skill set. Well, yeah. And it's not just a matter of capacity, right? Like while it is a matter of capacity in the sense that most CSM teams increasingly do not have the capacity to deliver as many trainings as we would want. So therefore someone needs to take the time. I think like the point that we've been inching towards this whole conversation is that just as much as it's a capacity thing, it's a capability thing. It's a competency thing.
Yeah.
And being able to deliver really strong trainings that actually change behavior, that can be made more scalable,
right,
that can be like core curriculum that get customized and adapted over time, actually can drive stronger results. And the MPS experiment that you pointed to, I think, I mean, I love that. I love that story as an example of how to actually test for that. At
yeah.
Slack, we did it almost the other way around, where the constraining factor was efficiency. We never had to think about our CSM ratios in our high touch segment. And then as time went on, when we needed to increase the ratios and change the portfolios, that actually triggered our teams working together to say, hey, if we know that CSMs now need a more consistent template to be able to draw from,
right,
so that we could say very clearly, like, in this case, you probably do not need human-led training at all. In this case, on the other side, this is clearly a service where things need to be customized to the point where we should be talking about signing an SOW.
Mm-hmm.
What happens in that messy middle? And how do we do that with respect to the CSM ratios? So that's how we ended up working from our core curriculum, which we called Slack User Essentials, the CSM Slack 101 deck that the high touch team used, the CSM 101 deck that the Scale team used and did webinars around, and basically looked at all three of those and looked at what are the skills that are actually being taught and how do we come together and say which ones of these are ultimately predictive of value later on with the platform. We looked at that with our data science team, not like super in depth, but enough to give us a pointer at what should we really be spending our time on, so that again, we could anchor that activity in, hey, we're making ourselves more efficient, but we're not completely forgetting at the end of the day, like, what is it the customer actually needs?
Yeah.
Standard versus bespoke.
Yeah. And then that's great. Having both sides of that equation are going to help you make the right decision for your business. Like both your product type, again, context matters, right? Like where we're at in our journey of maturing, how many employees you've got, like are you a multi-product company? How horizontal versus vertical are you? Like all those things are going to determine what your approach is, and both sides of that data kind of being run are important to help you pick the right mix. And I think, you know, the other thing I'll say, and this is just, I mean, I don't mean to be like just sort of rude about this, but if all CSMs are training, right, and that's how we're taking up their time, at some point you kind of have to do the math and figure out, okay, look, trainers are going to be, on average, they're cheaper to hire than CSMs. Why wouldn't you just hire enough trainers to fulfill that capacity as a business, right? Like, I think the other thing that we get stuck in is these sort of cost center versus, you know, like wars, and everyone wants more headcount. And the more headcount you have, the like more whatever you are. And I think that has resulted in some of these bad behaviors. It's like, ideally, as a leader, you actually want the smallest team to do the best job possible, right? And at some point, if you go too small, best becomes terrible. If you're too large, like, then you're not efficient, right? So you should be trying to find, as a leader, and we, I don't know why we don't incentivize people to do this, but like we really should. It's like to right size the offering for the customer outcome that you want and the overall experience that you're trying to create, right? But instead we say either everything is going to get, you know, coldly automated or offshored with no human touch, which I don't believe in, right? And I run, as do you, like skill teams. Or you like invest way too much on the like human touch side and you don't do anything automated. And so I think like having teams like, you know, really kind of figure that mix out together, and year over year, that should be in your planning cycle, is important. Mm-hmm. Because again, your business is going to change as you grow, your needs are going to change, and your mix might need to shift as well.
The way we often look at that, and like the way, especially at Personio, we've been looking at it this way more. And I think I thought about this like more loosey-goosey in the past, especially because, you know, in some of my previous gigs, we were still in the growth at all costs era. So we never really had to think about it this way. But we think about like, what is the North Star metric and what is the control metric? So if the North Star is retention or net retention, and the control metric is cost to serve, that implies a different set of decisions. That if the North Star is cost to serve and efficiency, and you know, customer outcomes is the control. Mm-hmm. So in a way, like being able to start from the point of what is it that we're actually trying to drive with respect to a different metric that's going to make sure we don't go too far in that direction, like has forced at least a little bit of that thinking that you're talking about to come into play. So that would be my recommendation. If you're working cross-functionally with folks on that, like get the decision makers to give a clearer steer to begin with on like what is actually the North Star metric here versus what's the control that we're watching for.
Yeah. And recognize that sometimes you're going to, like, that might even be short-sighted, right? Like, I think like early on, again, and like pre, like we're in a different era now and we're post, right? And it's like in kind of that pre-zero interest rate, it was like growth, but also you didn't really, like everything was sort of balanced against itself as opposed to against the actual intake from customers or the demands that were coming in from customers, right? You were trying to make sure the sales rep to CS ratios were like working out, and you were trying to make sure that you, like, you were sort of trying to build this internal machine that could serve what your growth rates were predicting was coming down the right? And not necessarily related to the actual work that you were going to have to do, which when you've got teams like ops already ready to go, you've got scale teams like ours, you've got all these other things already in the mix, it's not, it shouldn't be a one-to-one on the like high touch side. And that's not how you should be growing actually at all. Right. So it's like, so again, to me, it's like North Star or not, like, I think we're still going to end up having to course correct down the line for these decisions, and that's okay. Right. But I think it's funny to me because I think it is a little bit odd that you wouldn't want to right size your teams anyway. Like, it's harder to lead when they're too
small. Oh yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's
no, I totally agree.
Yeah. And that's what,
and that, and that's it. It used to be this like land grab for let me have as much headcount as possible. But now, if you actually are like more aggressively looking at cost to serve or looking at operational efficiency, like along with your other metrics, even if it's not the main goal, and we do this too. Like we're looking at like is our cost to serve increasing or decreasing over time. It does create, I think, a healthier incentive to say, let me not just throw humans at the problem, but let me actually find more like sustainable ways to solve this without tanking the customer experience.
Right. And it's like, and let's not, now that we're on this side, let's not like overcorrect either and go like way like, too much. Right. It's like, again, it's, I think that healthy balance of, is this the right size for the scope? Like if you're going to, if you need to optimize for smaller teams, then you need to cut scope. But I don't think those discussions happen. Right. I think we have these sort of visceral reactions to cost centers, and then we don't really think about cost. And I think that's what
kind
of drives me a little bit bonkers.
Yeah, I think we could have a whole other episode on that.
Yeah. Well, cool. So CSMs and training. Can you think of, other than a small company that's just starting out, where every role, not just CS, is wearing a lot of hats, can you think of another reason, Adam, where maybe CSMs would do training?
I think there are things that are training adjacent that a CSM can do, but I would say probably not like actual training. If it's actual training in the sense that there's a skill to be built, there's learning objectives, you could make a curriculum for it, it's probably something where you should already be exploring. Like, how can this be made sustainable over time? So maybe to that end, the only other case that I could imagine might be a good one is if you're deliberately experimenting with content and it's defined and there's a success criteria, there's end date, then it might make sense to have CSMs help pilot some of these things in the field in front of actual customers.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
But not necessarily as a going concern.
I love that, actually. Right. So sort of, yeah, a lot of times I'll see, you know, I'll talk to CS leaders who, again, one of the reasons that they want people on their team sometimes to do training is to allow them, you know, professional development opportunities. And they came up with other ones. And I'm like, first of all, like, I have some ideas for you. Like, don't make training the only, like, don't make like a go-to-market motion that's efficient be the way that you make it inefficient as a way to offer something to your CSMs. Like, don't do that.
True that.
But I think the idea of like, okay, CSMs might have like the Google 10% rule of back in the day, like use that to work on passion projects. Mm-hmm. If there are some CSMs like that, like I know at Miro, we've got a lot of CSMs who actually started out as trainers way back in the day. And, you know, so have that capability and that capacity, you know, sort of within themselves. Sometimes they're awesome to pull in to these one-to-many webinars in one of their now CS areas of expertise and say, like, let's do one of these things with the trainers. Or, you know, you're having your big product conference and you want to have breakout rooms, right?
Yeah.
Around like releases, but your scale team is only going to have a handful of trainers. Pull in that CSM that's got that, you know, talent in the day and leverage them. We've got so many great
trainers. All of those are great.
You know, like CSMs that used to train at Miro that we do that with. Like, shout out Betty if you're listening.
Yeah.
One of them. And we've got several in our APAC region as well who have some language skills that we can leverage live, right? So that's one way.
That's another good one, right? If you have CSMs who are serving specific markets that aren't served by more scalable training programs, that's another good one.
Yeah. So
can you think of others?
No, not really. I mean, that's why I asked you the question. I was like, what am I not thinking of that it might be, you know, and I think that this is a good idea for a future episode where maybe we can bring in my aforementioned CS bestie on like, hey, what are some ideas if you're struggling to book calls with customers? First of all, we should just unpack that topic just to begin with, right? And then figure out what are good reasons to, like, that might entice a customer to want to book a call, right? I think, like, recently, too, you know, the trend right now is to be like, no customer wants a QBR and, like, they'll never, you know, jump on a QBR with you. And I think that that's, like, that's been overly simplified and hyped. Like, I think that there are customers that want a good business review, you know, assuming that none of it's
but it's a reflection that we've like over indexed on these quantifiable activities instead of actually delivering value to customers. Right,
exactly. And I think it's like, and that's why nobody wants to be like talked at for an hour, you know, when they've got one of the, you know, 200 plus vendors that they have in their portfolio. So it's like,
This is like the whole like nobody wants to work anymore thing. It's I know nobody wants a QBR anymore.
That's right, Kim K. Like 100%. Like yeah, they do. They just you don't get it. But we should have an episode on like how do you sort of unblock some of these challenges. I think too. Like speaking of that, one thing I'll say about training, I think there's like a misconception that customers don't want to jump on webinars or like customers aren't taking academy training and stuff like that. That's also not true. I've got numbers from multiple companies that I can share that have just shown that those things continue to be valuable to customers. However, you do have to do them well. Like I think Jen, one of our probably one of the best trainers in the business, who I'm lucky enough to have on my team, she always talks about like every single webinar that she goes to deliver or any single like training that she goes to deliver to a customer, she thinks of it like this is their one Super Bowl that they're attending in their life. Like it, you know, I've trained thousands of customers this week, but this is the first time that they're going to see me. So I'm going to make this experience just absolutely delightful for them. And I love that she thinks that way before she goes into every webinar. And I think
that's a quality of a fantastic trainer.
Fantastic trainer. And I think personality matters. I think that's another thing we don't talk about too much, but you know, that's another reason maybe that CSMs should make sure that like they're thinking about, look, training isn't just about delivering of information. Like there is a performance element to it, right? And depending on your brand and the way that that sort of translates to your delivery style, not everyone is going to fit in that style, right? Like I probably could train at Miro because the style is a lot closer to my personality. I may not have been the best trainer at Visa though. Right. Or it might have taken me a lot longer to be able to adjust to that form of training. Right. And so I think that's important to understand too, that delivery is an art. And I think that that's another reason why we have to think about who is doing delivery.
Couldn't have said it better myself. I agree.
Well, cool.
I think we've drained it, Dee. I think we have found all the cases for it against CSMs doing training.
Yeah, and there's probably, I mean, we'll probably think of more after this, but I think that's a good start. I would love to hear from folks, you know, who listen to this podcast, like in the comments, like, you know, fight us. Tell us if you think we're wrong. We are always open to that, and we'd love to hear your perspective, whatever side of the coin you fall on. We'd love to hear it.
Yeah, I think we could ask for two things here. Number one, if you have a story or an example about CSMs doing training, good, bad, ugly, what you did about it, how you evolved the offerings, would love to hear it. We have our CX at our LinkedIn page where we're going to post a prompt for discussion about this. But second, as Dee mentioned, if you have an objection to this and you're like, hey, I'm a CS leader and I actually think it's really important for CSMs to be training, and here's why, and here's how we manage it and make sure that it's sustainable and scalable, like as we grow beyond being just an early stage company. Yeah, we'd love to hear those examples too. So head on over to our LinkedIn page, CXetera. We've also got CXetera.com. And while we would always love that 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, because that is the thing that people first see when they search for a podcast about CX. I think it's always more important for you to come and have a conversation with us. So please do.
Yeah.
And we will answer the question together of whether CSMs should do training.
Thank you for joining us. And yeah, can't wait to chat with you all online.
See you around the way.
See ya. Yes, sir.
That's my catchphrase now.
Yeah, it is.
Because if like we start talking a little bit on this, then we're not going to feel like, oh, we're in podcast mode. Now we have to say podcast stuff.
No, we have to break. We have to just pretend this is a Porchies.
Yeah. I mean, I should probably start bringing like a nice glass of wine to the recording.
I have my coffee, but like, you know, on a weekend, the time doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Lapses, right?
Well, like, coffee is the wine of the morning.
I've often said. I love it.
I mean, okay, hold on. I'm prepared to back this up. Because like, which two drinks have more of a terroir than wine and coffee?
Oh, oui, oui.
I defy you.
I would say, no, you're right. No, you're absolutely right. And I think that if we had to reduce our beverage consumption to just two drinks, those would be voted by most people. Like, I think coffee would win, hands down. I think
coffee would win. I mean, well, coffee is like people's identities.
It is people's identities. And I think that it is one of the, it's like the one thing that we all have a habit around, right? If we think about like all the other habits we're supposed to build that are like good for us and like we struggle with, you know? Coffee has never been a struggle for anyone.
Well, yeah, I mean, it helps that it's addictive, right? But they keep releasing these studies that say the coffee is good for you in this and that way. And I refuse to look into it any more than that because, you know, if the study says coffee is good, then I'm going to use that to justify my habit.
That's it.
I'm like,
well, so here's
one step away.
Like, I forgot how much stuff goes into food that's made. I probably need to read like Kitchen Confidential or something finally and just realize that like I eat out too much.
Or you could watch the 2003 Kitchen Confidential sitcom starring Bradley Cooper.
I can't deal with that dude, man. I can't watch like any of his movies. I can't deal. I'm just not a fan.
You can't go. You're not going to watch Alias? You're not going to go back and watch Alias?
I was an Alias.
Yeah.
I started Alias like years ago because I love Jennifer Garner and I never got into it. So it's like always been on my list to go back and see it. But now you said he's in it. I can't do it.